It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and as the year winds down, we're revisiting the conversations we had last week, looking at 2023 in review. The rest of our program is all about politics. Later on, we'll hear from Linda Kenyon, who I talked about what's been happening in Washington, but I started by speaking with Amanda Vinicky, who covers state government for Chicago Tonight, the news program for PBS station WTTW. Amanda, happy holidays. Good to talk with you again.
Happy holidays. Ho, ho, ho.
I'd like to start maybe with sort of a big picture, zooming out question. What were some of the overriding themes of Illinois politics this year?
There were a lot of issues that are actually sort of kind of marquee headline items, you could say, when you talk about things like guns, abortion, crime. They're easy sounding one-offs, but Illinois really had a lot of complicated policies brought to the fore in each of those areas this year. You're looking at an assault weapons ban, quote unquote, that went into effect and has continued and will continue to be the subject of litigation, potentially expectations, including from Governor Pritzker himself, that this could and will go to the U.S. Supreme Court and is in set policy potentially for the nation, at least options there when it comes to the regulation of guns, such as those used in mass shootings, like the one that was the impetus for this law, the Independence Day shooting in Highland Park. You had also, as I noted, crime. That it was something that has been on the forefront for folks for a while. Particularly during the COVID pandemic, you did see increases in the nation, including in Illinois' biggest city, Chicago. That remains something that I think is on top of mind for folks. But related to that, you had a major policy change go into effect this year, and that is the elimination of cash bail. And so we've yet to really see, I think, what that means. There's some early numbers coming in, but it's still pretty fresh. Again, that was subject to the litigation, so there were delays, but that went into effect this year. That's huge. And then abortion is one that I think we're still pretty recently out from the Dobbs decision, about a year and a half out. And so Illinois took action related to that very quickly after the Dobbs decision came out. But we're continuing to see, I think, that be something that Illinois is a national leader on. That is something that comes to the dismay of those who are anti-abortion, but for those who believe that this is, they believe in the freedom of choice when it comes to reproductive rights, Illinois is certainly continued to solidify its place as a leader in the year 2023.
You know, it strikes me that all of those things you talked about there involve court battles in some way or another, at least most of them do. And we talk about how this is a very blue state now. It's very democratically dominated. The Democrats do, you know, although there's disagreement on the margins of some of those issues you talked about, they generally seem to be pulling in the same direction. And yet, almost everything you talked about has been subject to court fights. Is that just the new normal in Illinois? Anytime the Democrats want to do something big, it's going to end up getting mired down in court battles?
You know, I mean, these are contentious issues. So that's part of it. And they also, these court cases are at least largely, you know, true constitutional questions. So it doesn't seem as if this is just, you know, you have folks who could say, oh, it's America, you can sue over anything. Nothing like that. These are pretty legitimate court cases. But they have something else in common, Brian. And I think that's another story. And that is sort of when we look at Illinois politics and the dominance of Democrats, there's one leader at the front of that, and that is Governor J.B. Pritzker. And these are all issues where he wants to make a name for himself with these measures, and he has. And so as we speculate some about what might come in the future for politics, certainly this is something that, as I noted, solidifies sort of Illinois' position on the national front, and by virtue of that, also brings Pritzker into the national four as well. I think I also skipped something, by the way, when you, in your original question, sort of the overriding themes of the year, when you brought up courts, duh, how can you ignore the corruption cases? That's something that we cannot let go of in Illinois, it seems, ever, but particularly in the year 2023, where you had former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan's best friend, longtime confidant, found guilty of a bribery scheme trying to influence Madigan. At the end of the year, we are seeing pushback from both Madigan as well as his former allies as they seek to say, hey, wait a second, was this actually, is there a quid pro quo? Or what about this notion of, is there a way sort of around it in legalese when you look at a case that the U.S. Supreme Court is set to take up out of Indiana. But regardless of what happens with that, I think that you cannot ignore the court cases regarding corruption in this past year.
No, and I'm glad you mentioned that because, you talked about Madigan's confidant, Mike McClain, and he was part of a group that was known informally as the ComEd 4. And that's all just prelude, though, for the big trial, which, as you mentioned, Speaker Madigan, he is scheduled to go on trial next year. He has asked for a delay pending the outcome of this Indiana case. But this is all an open question as to, what constitutes federal political corruption is what federal prosecutors can prove in court, right? It's not necessary. The law has changed over time.
Yeah, the law has changed over time. And it's one of those things where Madigan knows that law better than anybody. He did then, he does now. And so it will be so significant. The fact that Madigan is really, I guess you could say also in 2023, that Madigan is by and large out of Illinois politics for real now. I mean, for a while it was still, even though he was no longer speaker, he held positions with the ward, with the Democratic Party. He isn't running again for committee person. He's totally removed from politics. All that is left now is, I guess, his campaign bank accounts, which are not emptied despite using them for these ongoing court cases, and his, as of now, scheduled for April trial.
You know, it's interesting. I was reflecting on this the other day. How much energy went into people attacking Madigan. Do you remember there was that entire documentary film that was produced about him? There were organizations set up, buttons handed out. Multiple political campaigns of Republicans in Illinois were all hinged on firing Madigan. Fire Madigan, that was the watchword. He's gone. Democrats are still just as powerful and maybe even more liberal and progressive than they were when he was in charge of the House. It's interesting that how much effort was put into that. And it seems like practically, in terms of the policy outcomes that are happening in Illinois, not much has changed.
You know, I do think that it's certainly more progressive. He was somebody who sort of put the lid on that, at least to a degree. He was wanting to be more in the middle, more modest in Illinois' approach. And we have seen a swing more to the progressive side with his absence. I think that it's, as you noted, Democrats have not just held on to power, but they literally have increased it, at least by the numbers, in the Illinois House. And there's no indication that that is going to change anytime soon. I don't think you can, however, fully remove that from the structures that Madigan put in place. There might be a lot that folks can fault him for, but if you're a Democrat, you would likely credit Madigan for the building up of your party and the ability then for the party to enact all the things that we have been talking about.
And probably you have to credit President Trump for some of that as well, for the change, because people who would have been moderate Republicans like Bruce Rauner, for example, or Jim Durkin, couldn't necessarily get elected in the current environment by their own telling, really, in some cases.
Yeah. And, you know, Brian, I think that that's another hallmark of the year 2023 is Trump's return. And what that means going forward, we'll have so much to talk about it as the 2024 elections are here sooner than you and I will know it. But it is also his presence over this past year as he's sort of reemerging on the political scene and making records for court cases, for being under indictment. I mean, so many things that one would have not imagined possible for any politician, let alone one who has a very true shot at a second term as president of the United States.
You mentioned Pritzker's national ambitions a little while ago, or maybe you didn't quite mention them, but they certainly, we hinted at them and why he wants a lot of these progressive policy wins, in his view, here in Illinois, as he seems to be building up a national profile. There have been national articles written about him. Where do things stand? Do you see him continuing to try to expand that profile in the future here? Although he has says he's a big backer of Joe Biden, right? He's supporting Joe Biden for president.
He's supporting Joe Biden for president because Joe Biden is the party's nominee. But
presumed, presumptive.
Fair. You're right. Okay. The establishment's a choice. How is that? It is very, I think, clear. Most politicians wouldn't say no if you had the option of being profiled in The New Yorker, say, or if your name was mentioned as a possible contender in the future for a run at the White House. Least of all Pritzker, who has been politically ambitious from a very young age. He's never said no. This is something that I don't want for myself or for my family. Those are two really easy letters that have never come out of his mouth. So I think that we need to look at that. And then this is something else that is on my list of top stories for the year is that Chicago won with a lot of Pritzker's cheerleading and dollars. The Democratic National Convention, rights to host it. And so that is something else that I think we're going to have continued speculation about Pritzker and his political ambitions. And this is literally the national platform for a leading Democrat for that.
Do you see a backlash growing to certain progressive policies? I mean, we thought there might be one, at least Republicans thought they could ride this crime issue to some success. That turned out not to be the case last year anyway. I don't know if they're going to try it again, but the Democratic policies in terms of ending cash bail, that went through. Other things have gone through. We've also seen now with the situation with so many asylum seekers and migrants being bused to Chicago. Now they're being flown to Chicago. Now that Chicago is cracking down on the buses. I don't know what mode of transportation Texas will try next. But and you're seeing pushback to that in the city. And it really is changing the national conversation on the southern border because of what's happening in places like Chicago and blue states, blue cities. Do you see an increasing dissension within Democratic ranks on some of these issues?
Yeah, I mean, we already saw that emerge in the state budget, for example, as you had a group of progressives and Latino lawmakers seeking to provide healthcare for really any non-citizen. And then you in expansion of something that, even though this is coming at a hit to the Illinois budget, at a time where it appears going into the next fiscal year, there won't be as much money to go around for that. There are now additional pressures because of the influx of migrants. And so there certainly is, I think, friction in the party. And that's not going to be resolved by anything nationally, because you have just, I mean, loggerheads in DC where it doesn't appear as if there's going to be any sort of solution there. So I think this is going to be something that we continue to see play out. Is that going to lead to, Democrats losing power in the General Assembly? No. Is it going to be a difficult thing for Democrats to, particularly leaders, be it President Biden or Governor Pritzker, to straddle? And then, of course, the mayor of Chicago? Yes. And it's going to, it seems, only going to continue to have increased pressure.
Well, we're coming to the end of our time together, just about 2 minutes remaining. What are you going to be watching for heading into 2024? We mentioned Speaker Madigan's potential trial, or at least scheduled trial. He's trying to move that, as we said. But what else are you keeping an eye on next year?
The elections, of course, you are going to have a contest in Southern Illinois, it seems, between Congressman Bost and the former GOP nominee for governor, Darren Bailey. That's something that we'll be watching. We'll be watching to see things that we talked about, how that sort of manifests, the outcomes of this massive change in cash bail, whether the U.S. Supreme Court takes up the Illinois assault weapons ban and what that means, going to be presumably attending the DNC and watching what that does for Chicago as you have the pressure of the asylum seekers and the notion of crime and how much that kind of comes into the conversation. And is it something that Chicago is able to overcome, or are there going to be sort of massive protests and issues that malign the city and this becomes an albatross instead of a win? So those are, I think, some of the big things. There are plenty more. Of course, there was Kennedy construction that I can't wait to be finished. That's one that's on my list.
That's a personal one for you, I think.
But I think that, and then also I'm interested in what is going to be the future of the ICC and, you know, what we're paying for in terms of energy policy, natural gas. With Illinois' CEJA Act is going to be, it gets older, more money is put into it every year. And so is Illinois really able to make that transition to clean energy or renewables, and at what cost? And then what else are Democrats going to do with those massive numbers, and will they be able to hold on to them? I think the answer is certainly yes. It's just a matter of how much, and again, what they do with that power.
Amanda Vinicky covers Illinois government for the news program Chicago Tonight on PBS station WTTW. Amanda, thank you very much. Take care. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you and to all your listeners.
Coming up after the break, we'll turn our attention to the biggest news in national politics as it pertains to Illinois. We'll be talking with Linda Kenyon in Washington. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to last week's Year in Review program, where we talked about what made news in Illinois in the past year. And for the last part of our show, we looked beyond Illinois a bit, though what happens in Washington can and does have very real effects on our state. Here to talk through what she has seen in the Capitol is Linda Kenyon. She covers D.C. in our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. Linda, happy holidays. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's glad a good time to be here to talk about the year in review. What a year it has been.
What a year it's been. I feel like we say that every year since about 2015, though. You know, we've spent so many Fridays talking through the week-to-week ins and outs of what's been happening in national government. So I guess I want to take a step back and think, what were some of the big themes? And maybe we can just start with even what was the biggest story in national politics this year from your perspective?
I would have to say, from my perspective, it would be, and this is going to be the same thing that's going to happen in 2024, but it will have to be the balance of power, the jockeying for position, and that, of course, leads to the presidential election. There have been so many things going on. The candidates and the stories surrounding them have grown tendrils all onto themselves. All of the court cases involving former President Trump, all of the election challenges, all of the rulings, the daily drip, drip, drip of every nuance involving alleged misdeeds and actual misdeeds by the former president of the United States who wants to become the next president of the United States. That all tied up into one big giant ball of dysfunction on Capitol Hill. But I would have to say that the dysfunction on Capitol Hill is really an offshoot of what happened during the presidential election and the challenge to the presidential election. And now the court case is growing out of it. So they're all intertwined.
They're all intertwined, and it cost Speaker of the House his job. It cost a number of other leaders in the Republican Party their ambition to be Speaker themselves. We ended up with, what, the fifth candidate to put forth their name to be Speaker of the House, one of the most powerful, coveted positions in Washington?
Yeah, and you have to realize that the person who had the speaker position had wanted that job for as long as he's been in politics, I would hazard to say. And Kevin McCarthy, after 15 rounds of balloting, which was unheard of in a speaker's election in the House of Representatives, keep in mind that the House cannot function without a speaker. So that led to the dysfunction in Washington, in Congress. And by extension, for the country, because if the House can't do the people's business, then everything gets stalled. But Speaker McCarthy was ousted after less than a year in office as the coveted position of Speaker of the House. His power problems with the most conservative wing of the Republican Party, again, going back to that whole power play, the balance of power in Washington and beyond. And then the inability to find a replacement Speaker of the House until finally they coalesced around the current Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. And there's a lot of concerns right now that, yes, he's a conservative Republican. Yes, he had a measured blessing from the most conservative Republicans in the House of Representatives. But there are concerns that maybe the honeymoon is just about over. And that would be a big problem for Mike Johnson, and that could spell even more dysfunction and more fighting and jockeying for position in Washington.
And we've also seen the tendrils of former President Trump, as you, I think you use that word, tendrils, I like that, affecting the foreign policy of the United States. I think you and I are both, I don't want to say old enough, experienced enough to remember when Republicans were the hawkish, anti-Russian, anti-Soviet party in national government. Now you see some Republicans saying things about the president of Ukraine when he comes to visit, hat in hand, seeking support from the United States, saying things that are almost downright pro-Putin, pro-Russian. What a change in our foreign policy we've seen just in the last year. Yeah, go ahead.
It's a dramatic change. Republicans, as you rightly say, have always been known as a bit more hawkish, even a lot more than a bit more hawkish than Democrats. But initially, Republicans and Democrats were united behind Ukraine. And while they say they're still united behind Ukraine, there is a major fight going on that's going to carry us into the new year on how to help Ukraine in its fight against Russia. We have former President Trump saying words of praise for Russian President Vladimir Putin, who invaded Ukraine, saying that he's a very good leader. And he's also had words of praise for the head of China and the head of North Korea. And that is all very worrisome to people who are very concerned and, you know, about what that means on the world stage. And so we have a president now, President Biden, who is trying desperately to get Congress to agree to fund Ukraine's battle against Russia, because money is going to be all gone by the end of December. And if Congress doesn't act on that, Vladimir Putin is going to be in a position of even more power than he is. And he is relishing this opportunity to overrun Ukraine. Now, that's a problem for the United States of America as a NATO nation. And it could be called upon to actually put American troops on the ground to fight Russian troops if Putin continues to march across Ukraine into surrounding NATO nations. So this is a very, very big concern. But I will point out that this concern is going to get even larger because Congress will have left town for the rest of the year and won't be back until first or second week of January, depending on the House or the Senate. And we're coming up against a perfect storm of trying to help fund the president's emergency budget request for Ukraine, Israel, U.S. border security, and a few other things in the president's emergency request. And that is going to come up at the same time as the current government funding for some of the current government agencies and departments will run out. And that deadline, unfortunately, is coming up really soon. So if the Senate, for example, comes back on January 8th, well, we have a situation where the funding for the government, which was extended under what they call a continuing resolution, continuing last year's funding levels, that's going to run out on January 19th. So how do you do all of that at the same time without having a total meltdown on Capitol Hill? And keep in mind, these folks on Capitol Hill just about had it with each other. A lot of them really don't like each other. We saw that in great detail. And some of them have said, you know what, I've had enough of this. I'm out of here. They're either resigning before their terms are over, or they're not seeking re-election. So this is a very, very caustic situation. And it is not the Congress of old that used to be. You could agree politically, but you didn't have to be, as they say, disagreeable with one another.
Yeah, going out for a drink after work. You know, it's interesting because you say some of them really hate each other or can't stand each other. And you're not necessarily even talking about between Democrats and Republicans. You're talking about within, I guess, particularly the House Republican Conference, although we've seen some of that in the Senate Republicans as well. I guess Mitt Romney has no cares left to give, as people say, with some of the things he said to the McKay Coppins in his book. But it's really a remarkable time. I mean, has there ever, in your experience covering politics, been this level of vitriol in the Congress?
Not only in my experience, but I think almost in everybody's experience, except for the days of the Civil War, I don't think it's ever been this nasty. And, you know, it's very hard to cover Congress, which is an esteemed institution, if you relish the history of not only the institution, but Capitol Hill, the structure itself, when you realize that the humans who are populating the Capitol building on the House and the Senate side are not exactly acting like grown-ups in so many instances. And we're supposed to be looking up to these people. And again, we may not have to agree with them politically, but we certainly did have a lot of reverence for the people and the institution and respect. And a lot of that is gone.
What do you think were some of the undercovered stories this year? I mean, we spent so much time focusing, especially someone like yourself, who's professionally a Washington observer, but focusing on the leadership fights in the House of Representatives and foreign affairs. What were some of the undercovered stories nationally this year?
You know, there was a lot of overlooking, I suppose, if that's even a word, of climate change, I would say, that the White House has tried very hard to make climate change a centerpiece. But I would say that on Capitol Hill, climate change has still been kind of, you know, swept under the rug. There have been a lot of people who complain about climate change, but not a lot of will to do anything about it. And the problem with that is climate change is not just a situation where it's getting hotter or it's getting colder. Climate change is like we used to think of El Nino as the big overarching story because, you know, now climate change in general, because what that does is if you have flooding because of climate change, if you have people having to migrate to different parts of the country or different countries entirely because they can no longer make a living or have a decent life because of the effects of climate change in their home countries, what does that do? Well, that means that people are going to be seeking livelihoods elsewhere. And that has led in large part to the problem we have with immigration. So while everybody has been focused on the problems of immigration. Certainly by the end of the year, they were talking about it in great detail, trying to deal with border security issues. The root cause of all of that has been, in part, global climate change. And in my humble opinion, we haven't paid enough attention to not just the effects it has on climate, but the effects that it has on the economy writ large, the economy around the world, and what that does in terms of migration.
We're coming to the end of our time together, and we've talked about the climate. We've talked about former President Trump. One thing that I think a lot of people are worried about heading into next year's election is the idea that it's not just another election with two men, presumably two men, who are expected to be on the ballot. It's really the idea of American democracy itself, right? We had former President Trump, despite a Fox News host's best attempts, saying that he would be fine with being a day one dictator. It doesn't seem to have affected his standing in the polls. What do you make of people who say it's the question of American democracy itself on the ballot heading into the election next year?
I will tell you that a lot of the people that I speak to, either colleagues, politicians themselves, high-level analysts, they have often said to me, and certainly to many other people, that democracy is broken. And that's a pretty startling thing to say, because democracy, as President Biden often says, is an idea that the United States of America is the only nation in the world that was founded on an idea. And if that idea is broken, then the nation is broken. And so we have to sort of look inside and say, are we going to live in a nation that is broken, or are we going to piece together the parts and make a stronger democracy? And I think that when we get closer to the elections, and it's going to be a wild ride, we may start to see the answer to those questions.
Linda Kenyon covers national politics in our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. Thank you, as always. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. I will talk with you again in 2024.
That sounds wonderful. And happy holidays to you and everybody listening. Thank you, Brian.
And that is all we have time for today. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year. We'll talk with you again next week.